I'm reading from the Gospel according to John, the 5th chapter, reading the 1st through the 9th verses. Jesus went to Jerusalem for a religious festival. Near the Sheep Gate in Jerusalem, there is a pool with 5 porches. In Hebrew, it is called Bethesda. A large crowd of sick people were lying on the porches, the blind, the lame, and the paralyzed. A man was there who had been sick for 38 years. Jesus saw him lying there, and he knew the man had been sick for such a long time, so he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" The sick man answered, "Sir, I don't have anyone here to put me in the pool when the water is stirred up. And while I'm trying to get in, somebody else gets there first." Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat and walk." Immediately the man got well. He picked up his bed and started walking. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Many modern tourists have gazed far down into the now stagnant and polluted water of the Pool of Bethesda in Jerusalem. It's near the Church of St. Anne. The liveliness that the Bible describes that was in that water no longer happens. Apparently, there was an intermittent spring down there that would occasionally and without warning make the waters begin to boil and bubble. And the feeling of the people was that an angel was disturbing the water. And the legend grew up around the community that any sick person who was able to get into that water once it began to bubble would be cured of almost any illness. Now, before we smile and think how naive of them to think such a thing, remember what happened at all the warm springs around the Shenandoah Valley back in the generation before us. I'm amused that where I had the church down in Rockbridge Baths, I found a folder from the old hotel that's long burned down, and I saw Robert E. Lee's signature on the registry there. It said, "If you bathe in the pool at Bethesda, you will be cured of," and it gave a long list of all kinds of illnesses, the last of which was female complaints. So we still think of curing and healing waters. But the little game the people of Jerusalem played of being the first person to get in made it impossible for the man who is the center of this story to be actively involved. As Jesus approached Bethesda and saw the crippled man, he was always the friend of the friendless and the helper of those who have no help. And just on his own, without being asked, he turned aside to help this man. And you and I can be glad he did. Because in this short story from the Gospel of John, we can learn some of the parameters for receiving power from God. Some of the requirements that are involved in that. Jesus began by asking the man if he wanted to be well. Now you might think that's a ridiculous question, but it's not. Do you want to be well? He'd been waiting for 38 years. Maybe he had given up hope. Perhaps he was coasting along with that passivity, that neutrality that can come to us and trap us when we've been sidetracked for a long time. Maybe by now he was content to remain an invalid. If he were cured, after all, he'd have to pick up all the burdens of making a living. Helplessness can become sweet. It brings a freedom from responsibility. Have you heard of a college student who did not want to graduate? I have. Hey, I just want to go on being a student. Ooh, I like the parties and all that. If I graduate, I'll have to get a job. So here is our first clue for receiving power from God. We have got to want it, desire it, welcome it. Jesus comes to us and asks, do you want to do great things? Do you want to contribute something worthwhile to the world? Do you want to leave something beautiful behind when you're gone? Do you want to be changed? And if we don't, if we are content to remain as we are, then there will be no help for us. No power will come. We will remain as we are. The desire for better things has got to be burning inside us. So Jesus asked him, do you really want to be well? Then get up, rise, take up your pallet, that sack of cloth that you call a bed, and walk. And there we have our second clue to receiving power from God. God's best desire for us requires our participation. God's power is not a substitute for the part we've got to play. We can't just sit back and relax and wait for a miracle to happen. You see this? Miracles happen when God's power and our interest and effort are in partnership and work together to get something done. The doctor complimented me for following his instructions so carefully. I told him, Anna made me do it. And she did. Let me tell you, we could report some stories here. He told me that he had a patient to return to his office and complained that he wasn't getting any better. And the doctor said he asked him if he was taking his medicine regularly. And the man looked surprised, said, what? That stuff, I don't want to take that stuff. I never take it. And the doctor said to him and to me, this is a partnership. I do my part. You've got to do your part. Christ has no hands but our hands to do his work today. He has no feet but our feet to lead men in his way. He has no tongue but our tongue to tell them how he died. He has no help but our help to bring them to his side. When we get our hands into it, then God's will is done on earth as it is in heaven. Don't miss the fact that what Jesus was asking this crippled man to do was nothing short of the impossible, the unbelievably impossible. That crippled man, hearing the words, rise, get up, take up your mat, I imagine he could have responded with a kind of injured resentment. I can't do that. Pick up my pallet and carry it away while it's been carrying me for 38 years. And I can imagine him feeling insulted. Certainly mocked. I can imagine him making a feeble attempt to push himself up off the ground with the back of his knuckles and falling back and saying, it's no use, I can't do it. Listen, the reason a baby learns to walk before it can talk is that otherwise it would say, I can't. How many times I've seen it, the halfway feeble effort with an expectancy of failure before the act is even started. A pervading negativism rules out all possibility of achievement. You are sure it's impossible even before you try. I saw it happen at a VMI basketball game. I saw two players try to intercept or at least knock away a passed ball. And you could see, without being expert in these things, you could see as that ball was coming by him that even as he reflexively knew he was supposed to jump up and catch it, that he knew he couldn't and he would miss it and he would go through the action but never touch the ball. But you realize if he had gone ahead and just jumped 2 inches higher, just stretched out his fingers a little bit more, he would have had an interception. But he didn't give it everything he had. Do you want it? Do you want to draw upon the tremendous reserve of power that is ours in God? Well, that's a great first step. Now take the second. Attempt the impossible. Rise and walk. Take up your pallet. Put every ounce of energy and effort you've got into it, and then trust God to supply the rest. To the chronically ill man beside the pool, it was a time of amazement. He did it. Many things in this world beat us, defeat us, conquer us. But when we have an intensity of desire and make the effort even when it seems utterly hopeless, we give God an opportunity. With Christ, we can conquer the formerly impossible. Now, let me illustrate that sublime truth with a ridiculous example from my own experience. I was helping some men put a new roof on a country church. I was getting along very well until they passed around the cokes. Now, these cokes were in the old-fashioned glass bottles with pressed metal caps stamped on them. And as the preacher, I was thinking up clever things to say about a church key. When, to my utter amazement, I saw these carpenters who had spent most of their adult lifetime on the business end of a claw hammer, grab those Coke bottles by the neck, rest the claw across their thumb, and go, poof, and that cap came right off. Unbelievable, I'd never seen such a thing. Poof, all around they were doing this. Now what was I going to do? I'll say, would one of you guys open my Coke for me? No way. The preacher was trying to be a man among men, and I was going to fix this one myself. So I did what I saw them do. I grabbed that bottle by the neck, put the claw of a hammer on my thumb, and began to pull. And I bruised my thumb. And I chewed that cap into slivers, but I got it off. The other men pretended not to notice. Suppose the Lord gives you a job to do, gives you a chance to improve your lot with another start in a new direction. Suppose he sends someone your way who needs your help or shows you how you can do something for your church. God makes the challenge. God gives you the opportunity. It's almost like God says, now here's something I want you to do for me where you live. This is your assignment. Now get busy and do it. How do you respond? Like Moses? Send, O Lord, I pray, some other person. Like the people in Christ's parables, I've bought a field and I've got to go inspect it. I've bought 5 yoke of oxen. I need to see what condition they're in. I've gotten married. I can't go and do that. Or let me first bury the dead. So let me tell you a fable. Some little mice got together in a committee meeting. And the leader spoke up first and says, that cat is terrible and dangerous. Whenever I go into the pantry to find a little crumble of something to eat, the cat comes chasing me and it's all I can do to run back in here to safety. We've got to do something. And a young mouse spoke up and said, I know what we can do. Let's all gang up together and go charge that cat and chase her and frighten her and she'll leave us alone. No, no, said a wise old mouse. That cat is brave and strong. We would never get away with that. I have a better idea. Let's tie a bell around the cat's neck. And then when she begins to move, we will hear that bell ring and we'll have plenty of warning and we can get back in here to safety. Oh, terrific, they said. That's a wonderful idea. Perfect. We will bell the cat. And they all began to cheer and to dance. And when things settled down again, one of the mice was bright enough to speak up and said, but who will put the bell around the cat's neck? And they turned to the man who came up with the idea and asked him if he would do it. And he said, oh, you know, I'm just getting too old for that kind of thing. This requires somebody who's quick and energetic and can do it more safely than I could. And they all got quiet as mice. They turned to the man who called the committee meeting and said to him, hey, will you put the bell around the cat's neck? Oh, no, he said, I've been kind of lame ever since that time I almost got caught in the trap. Well, then who will bell the mouse? And they all got quiet as mice. And one by one, they began to creep away, no better off than they were before. Amen.